Welcome to episode 24 of season 9 of the Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off his stint is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hello, ready to talk more crazy fighter jet action.
Wait, there's crazy fighter jet action in this movie? I don't know. I'm not familiar. Maybe we should talk about it.
Let's go.
Episode 24 begins with the truck continuing to slide and ends with Gabriel threatening John. So basically, after 2.5 minutes, you know what? I gotta say, I'm really glad that I decided not to do this movie minute by minute, because I don't know what I would have done in the last the last section had I needed to do them minute by minute. There wasn't really much to talk about.
No.
Without being very repetitious. So, But who knows? Well, it's not an option, so it doesn't matter. I'm glad that I chose globally that I'm doing it 5 minutes at a time, as opposed to specifically because of those episodes.
Keep
fairness across the entire movie. So we ended things yesterday with John in the big rig on a bridge that was being shot up by the F-35, and John, the truck losing traction and starting to slide backwards. That's more or less what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And John is trying to figure out what he's supposed to do here at this point. You know, we see that he's pressing on the gas, but nothing's happening. We see the shot from the pilot's perspective that he's, you know, ready to shoot at the actual cab of the truck to let them go also at the same time. And then we see something break off from one of the other ends of the bridge. And it's strange that the pilot actually looks up as if he's heard, you know, the road breaking.
I doubt he'd hear much in a fighter jet with all that going on. Yeah.
Exactly. John looks up too.
Speaking of what he hears, I mean, this is just a random notice. Again, this is a bit more of a trope, I guess. But I was intrigued by it because when you see his little aiming scope, I don't know what to call it, where you kind of see what he's aiming at, and you get that kind of high pitch little digga-digga-digga when he's aiming. I often wonder, is that a thing? Do you actually hear anything when they're aiming, I guess? When you play video games and things like that, you do get these little
indicator. I think it's for the fans, necessarily for the pilot himself. No. You know, it shows that he's at an altitude of 500, which I don't think he's 500 feet in the air, but maybe.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem. I mean, it's quite a high lot of road, but not that high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So not really sure about how that works, but you know, then the bridge on the other side starts collapsing, and then the pilot decides to get out of the way and flies right underneath the truck itself. And then we see the truck starting to fall, and this is really strange. I mean, again, you talked about the editing yesterday. You really like the editing here, but I gotta tell you, this shot is really poor editing, because we don't see John leave the truck.
Seem odd, this scene. Like, there's one bit where, I thought this bit was weird. Like, he kind of, there's a moment where it looks like he's out of the truck, but actually watching it again, I guess it's because he's got the open top, because you see him kind of leaping and there's that thing falling down. It looks like he's got out of the truck, and then suddenly he's back in the truck, which is kind of confusing.
That's right. Then he's in the back of the truck itself, and he rolls down through the whole truck, and then ends up, opening the doors based on the way that he's rolling through.
I think what's partially confusing is this bit where he's rolling down. It suddenly seems quite dark, as though it's in a closed truck, but isn't it all totally open by now? Maybe at the back there's enough kind of stuff still knocking around. But
Maybe.
Yeah. I think they did it purely for the visual, obviously, at the end. It's quite a cool bit where suddenly it opens up and you see the jet underneath. I think they just
That's
did it
right.
for
You
that.
see the jet underneath, and then John is able to hang on to the back door.
Yeah.
You know, he's hanging on there, and the pilot sees him. But then like a brick falls out of the truck that made the same journey that John did, you know, through the you know, through the tunnel of the truck,
Yeah.
and the brick lands directly in the I guess the afterburner of the jet, and you know, the pilot realizes that he's completely out of control. And you know, once again, we get to see the screen in front of the pilot, and it goes, engine cutoff fail, total EGI fail. I don't know what EGI stands for.
Engine, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, there's some other cool stuff that's written on there at the same time. You have, besides that, you have speed BRK fail, VMC CHC fail, system one accumulated low, total EGI fail, and DGRG thrust, which again, I have no idea what any of these things mean. But it's just interesting, like, you know, why they would have them as a, why they would say break BRK instead of, I
It kind of looks legit that I don't mind, but yeah, who knows what it all means.
And we see the pilot's hand on the stick, that things are a little shaky. And he like moves away from where John is, and then the plane is right under John, so John lands on, you know, the wing of the, or the top of the jet, and the pilot looks at him, and John looks back at him as they're spinning around, you know. And then we see that it says total EGI fail once again, and the pilot doesn't even hesitate for a second and pulls the eject button and ejects from the whole thing.
This is a
Now,
moment that I feel like, oh, I think I don't know if you're about to say what I was about to say. Is this a callback to two, do you reckon?
I think it's definitely a call back to two.
Yeah.
No question about it, except for the fact that the pilot probably knows what he's doing, as opposed to John, who just you know, randomly did that. So it also got me thinking, can one safely eject from a plane that's flying this low?
Oh yeah,
So
that's a good
what do you think?
point. Well, it just kind of push you, it just fire you up to get away from the aircraft, I guess. But would it fire that far? I don't know. Oh, I don't know. It's a good one. I kind of feel like you maybe should, although you need some time for the parachute to open up. So, yeah, it probably would be a pretty damn risky.
So, I mean, according to the research that I did, and again, I'm not a you know, an expert on aviation. Probably if I were to ask Hal or Chris, they would be able to give me more of an answer. Maybe I should have asked them before we recorded this. But the research that I got is that you should usually only eject around 2,000 feet above ground level. You know, if you're in a dire situation or whatever it is. But obviously in this type of situation, wherever you are, you're going to do it, even though it might add to the risk of you getting injured, according to this. Now, according to the research that I did, in modern aircraft, which assuming that 2007 is also considered in that category, they have ejection seats which are called 00 rated, which means that they can safely eject at zero altitude with zero airspeed,
Oh, wow, okay.
even though there's more of a chance of injury. Okay, so
This is.
the question really is, and this goes back to what you mentioned earlier, that when you eject in this type of situation, there, you know, it's still using some sort of jet propeller to raise the altitude of where you are.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, it's probably not really high enough for it to be completely safe, but you know, it's still possible,
Yeah.
you know, realistically. Again, he should be happy he's not under one of the bridges, because that wouldn't
Yeah, I
have
was gonna
gone
say he was pretty damn close to them though, and I guess with parachutes gonna but
very
yeah. But
well.
again, this scene can never really be it. analyze for realism.
Yeah, for sure. And the plane is still spinning with John on it, and John's trying to figure. He gets into a superhero position, getting ready to jump, and then he jumps off of the wing of the plane. Okay, lands on one of the bridges that have now that is now at a strange, I guess you could say like a 120 degree angle or something like that, and you know, he then slides down the bridge, you know, properly as the plane explodes above him, and thankfully John is safe into this in this bridge because you know even the fire from the explosion doesn't reach him.
No.
So, you know, he timed it really well. And then we get a quick shot showing that the pilot is actually safe.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's definitely needed because. Because ultimately, the pilot, although he's attacking a hero, he's just doing his job. He's not really technically a bad guy. So no. I guess they had to have that in there. So,
right.
So they didn't suggest that John McClane has killed some innocent, like not RAF. Sorry, that's the UK American Air Force, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. No. What's interesting though is you see the way that the parachute opens up, and he literally falls within a second onto the ground.
Yeah,
you know, which I don't think that would really slow his rate of descent.
Pretty much, no.
Okay, so my assumption is that in real life, at best, the pilot has broken both of his legs.
Yeah, severely.
And then John, you know, gets up from among the rubble that's around him, sees the plane, the flames from the plane. And then crawls out of what looks like an apocalyptic, world.
Wasteland.
Yeah. Where there's a yellow truck that has been overturned, which makes it look like it was the hazmat truck, even though it's not. if we see a burnt out car as John like walks through it and tries to figure out what's going on. And then thankfully, John, you know, sees very close in the distance that the hazmat truck has actually stopped right near where they are.
That seems odd because as well it doesn't seem that far away, and he sees it kind of pulling up because it feels like he's been driving around that thing for a while. Well, it's been a few minutes.
Well, we know that a few minutes in our time, it's a few minutes. Yeah. So
I don't quite buy that. Yeah,
no.
unless Timothy Oliphant pulled over to watch the carnage, but you don't get the sense that he would have done that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Don't think so at all. And then John pulls out his gun, you know, from the holster and starts walking in that direction. And then we see the hazmat van skid into this whole industrial area. And thankfully, they know where they're going. And, you know, John starts running through, trying to get closer to them. And then we see one of the goons open the doors to a warehouse. That they bring the hazmat truck in. Now, as the hazmat truck is entering this building, you can see a sign on the wall. Did you happen to notice what it says?
No, I'd say on my computer it's quite blocky. I struggle to read stuff now.
It says safety first. One day since our last injury. One day,
one day.
which tomorrow they're going to have to change that again. but it's just very funny that it like really sticks out there. Mm. So I like the fact that you can see that it says one day.
Yeah. I like that in those last few seconds, there's quite a few really nice little tracking shots in there. I think they're trying to make this kind of bog standard shot of people driving in somewhere and getting out interesting by these really nice tracking shots with depth. You've got stuff in the foreground coming through. So again, like I say, it's a slick film, even if occasionally there are some bizarre lapses in logic in the editing.
Yeah, but it still works.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that what we want here?
Yeah, exactly.
The van just stops in the middle of this warehouse where we see they have other trucks there, so their other van. So they have a plan. You know, they're gonna, you know, switch the hazmat truck for something else. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. And it's nice to see that we can actually see the license plate, and it is the exact license plate that John said earlier.
Nice.
You know, the GT592N, which tells us that Bowman is still going to be able to try and track to the right place.
And speaking of which, we get a quick shot of them in a second.
That's right. So, and then they, you know, one of the goons takes out, you know, opens the back of the truck and takes out Lucy and Farrell, who Farrell is, you know, still not handcuffed anymore. And then we see the FBI helicopters moving forward. And, you know, they now know, okay, the hazmat van is somewhere else. Let's go. And then Gabriel is looking right at us at the screen and says, "We are leaving in 3 minutes. You have won." So nice and threatening. And then he turns the computer over to Farrell and wants Farrell to take it. Farrell goes, "The rules have changed, man. You're going to kill me the minute I unlock it." And Gabriel knows that he's just got to deal with this as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And he just shoots him in the leg.
Yeah.
I don't think he kneecaps him, but he shoots him in the leg.
No, yeah, I think he's holding it slightly above the in the next shot. So yeah,
exactly. And then he pulls Lucy towards him, and Lucy's crying, and he goes, "Oh shit!" And then he goes, "Matthew, I really need you to pay attention. The rules can always change. Okay, wait. I'm going to shoot her in 10 seconds. Wait. He goes, 9. I can't. 8. I can't. Oh, God. And then, you know, there's another shot that goes out, and he goes, okay. You know, so Farrell is pretty weak in this type of situation, which, again, it's what you would expect from someone
like him
at this point. You know, considering the fact that he's also losing blood and been shot.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. I know what else he could do, really, I guess.
Right. Yeah, no, and he, you know, you'd think that it would be very simple for him to also type in the code and just let it out.
Yeah.
You know, not as if there's much that he needs to do to think about how he's going to do that.
No, I guess he just doesn't want to, but yeah.
That's right. And then he goes 6, and he goes, "Okay, just stop. I'm doing it. And Farrell goes, "Oh, God." And he starts typing in. And he goes, "Oh, my God." So, you know, Farrell, like we both just said, Farrell doesn't have a choice. He knows that he's got to do this. And then, you know, he'll see what's going to happen afterwards, you know, from that perspective. And then we get another shot of the helicopters flying towards the Baltimore area, and then a car enters the warehouse and screeches to a halt.
Really nice that shot. Again, it kind of pulls back from one car coming in.
Yeah,
tracks the other guy, then ends up what's his name doing his hacking and all that business. So
Farrell doing the hacking.
Really tricky shot to pull off in terms of focus and movement and blocking and things. Yeah, cool.
But we also now can see for sure that there's only 3 bad guys that are, 4 bad guys that are left. Yeah. You know, you have Trey, then you have Gabriel, you have Emerson, and a nameless guy.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we see that Trey's the guy who brought the car in, and he opens the trunk, and, you know, he's ready. He goes, "The feds are heading this way." Now, how does he know the feds are heading this way? Because did he intercept a call saying that you know, that they low-jacked the whole thing?
Probably, I guess, or he's tracking them or something like that. I imagine, yeah, anything's possible with these ridiculous skills they've got in this film, I guess.
Right, it's true.
To be fair, if the helicopters are coming, they might see them.
Okay, but they're not. We know they're not there yet. They've still got a few minutes before they're going to show up. So, yeah. You know, anyone who's seen the movie knows that they didn't just land right now.
No, not land, but I mean, you might see them flying over something in the distance, but yeah.
Maybe. And then he says, okay, get everything on the plane. So at this point, Trey starts pulling stuff out of the trunk. And then, you know, he grabs his little duffel bag with a gun in hand, starts running out towards walking out fastly out of the warehouse. And then he gets surprised by John, who just shoots him.
Yeah, that's quite surprising because Trey's quite a, he's in there, isn't it? He's quite a key character. He plays quite a big part and he's just kind of bang. It's like,
that's right.
You expect a little more. In a way,
you don't expect it. That's what
it's quite a nice moment, but at the same time, when I was first watching it, I kind of got the feeling that he wasn't that happy with his job, like getting a bit forced into doing this stuff. So I kind of felt like maybe he'd turn on them. I'm so bad with names, but
Gabriel,
Gabriel, that's the one. But no, yeah, they just shot what
he deserves, I
guess.
I don't
for
think.
All his work.
I think that he's reached the point where he's gotten more than he bargained for, but
yeah.
He's still, you know, he's still willing to do this.
Yeah.
You know, even you know, last week when we had the whole thing where they shot everyone else, you know, he was not happy about it, but he still did it.
Yeah.
He knew that this was part of the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even something that came to him as a surprise. He knew that this is what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So from that perspective, you know, he doesn't really have much of a choice.
No. He's an interesting character too, in terms of that, because Gabriel is supposed to be the super hacker, but he doesn't really do that much. It tends to be Trey doing everything, which is, I don't know if that's explained anywhere, or if it's just because Trey's above that now.
Right.
But yeah, it does seem odd that he's not doing more himself.
Makes you wonder. But yeah, they don't need Trey anymore anyway. You know,
nope.
They got Farrell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then John runs in and you know, Gabriel is shocked, but he still you know, holds the gun on Lucy at the time. And then John continues and shoots the other nameless bad guy. The guy standing in front of the van. So that works well too.
Yeah.
And Lucy then screams, "Dad!" And he goes, "Careful." And then John goes, "Don't worry, baby. Everything's going to be all right." Still trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this.
Yeah.
And then John gets shot in the shoulder.
Mm.
We don't know who shot him. I mean, we do, because there's only one guy left. Besides besides Gabriel, there's only one goon left. So it makes sense, but still, you know. And then Lucy screams, "Daddy!" And I love that they give us a little bit of a shot of John's gun having gone flying on the ground to within eyesight of Farrell, who happens to see the gun.
Yeah, again, this is like what I was saying about how I do think, although it's quite fast cutting, and other than the bits we mentioned in previous episodes, it is generally it does quite a good job of just feeding you enough information for it to make sense and not just be a bit of a bewildering mess of shots like some action movies can be.
Right. It's true. And then we see that it actually is Emerson who shot him, which my biggest question is, okay, Emerson has a machine gun, but he only shot John once. Why didn't he just
little tap in the
shoot
shoulder?
Him on full, you know, you can use full automatic and that'll be it.
I think action heroes have secret like strong magnets in their shoulders or something, just to aim bullets that way instead of anywhere serious.
Maybe.
Although in reality, if you got shot in the shoulder, it'd probably do quite a lot of damage still. It wouldn't kill you maybe, but it'd disable you quite badly.
Yes, I would agree. And John is rolling around on the ground, screaming in pain. And Gabriel then takes Lucy and basically throws her over to Emerson. And we get a shot of Farrell also doing a little bit of hiding there and stuff like this. And I love when Gabriel throws her to Emerson. He actually says, "Hold this," as opposed to, you know, hold her, everything. And then Gabriel starts walking closer towards towards John, you know, who's on the other side of the car, dealing with the whole thing. And they do a nice job of this by showing John, looking underneath the car.
I was going to say, in general, it's a nice sudden twist from all-out bang-bang action to just suddenly turning into tension. It is quite a tense little moment, this next kind of minute.
Right, this is more of a Die Hard type of scene.
Definitely.
You know, again, it's a callback to the scene in the very beginning of the first Die Hard, you know, at the end, at the beginning of the series, the end of that first movie, you know, when Hans has decided to take Holly as a hostage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, that type of thing. Then Lucy somehow, outmaneuvers Emerson and then grabs the gun he has, on his waist and just pulls the trigger, shooting him in the foot.
I guess she does something. I guess I must have forgotten about this moment now, but yeah.
And then she kicks the gun towards John.
Oh, and then, but then it fails. Yeah.
You know, John reaches his arm out to go grab the gun, and then we see that it gets stopped by Gabriel along the way.
Hmm.
And then Emerson starts threatening her again, and Gabriel just looks at him and goes, "Jesus Christ, you got her." I mean, Gabriel has no patience for any of his goons. You know, even back in the beginning, you know, he says, "I sent four of you there," and what?
I think it's a bit like what I was saying in the last episode. He's not the most evil of bad guys, but he's just
yes, completely. And Emerson shakes his head yes and goes, "You sure?" And then he looks at Lucy and goes, "It's a nice effort, though." And then he goes, "Matthew." You know, trying to making sure that the Pharaoh will show up again and help.
Yeah, although it's risky, but there. He shoots very close to the computer.
Yes. That's right.
It could have easily ricocheted off and smashed it up.
For sure. And then Pharaoh stands up and goes, "Oh," and he goes, "All right, okay, I'll do it. I'm doing it. I know." And, they give us a shot of John grunting on the ground and Lucy not being very comfortable where she is. And then Gabriel goes, McClane sees John limping towards him. And then he gets very close to John and pulls him up. And as he pulls him up, he says, "Would you do me a favor? I know the lights are beginning to dim, but if you just hang on for a second. As soon as Matt finishes, I'm going to kill him and your daughter. And I would love for you to see that." You know, he is a typical Bond villain from that perspective.
Yeah. You know, he won't just shoot him. He wants to see that. Yeah, yeah. wants to give him a chance.
He's going to tell him a little bit more than about what his plan is. which could work.
And foolishly give him a chance to survive.
Yeah, seriously. And that's how this segment ends. So did you have anything else you wanted to talk about with this particular segment or the movie in general?
I think I've kind of covered those scenes, but it's kind of a shame we're so close to the end. I'm like, oh, can we just do another minute as I did the 5 minutes? But no, yeah, it's...
Someone else will get to talk about that tomorrow.
But yeah, no, as I say, I think I've covered it pretty well. It's a solid action movie, but as we keep repeating, I guess it's just maybe not quite a Die Hard movie, but I had fun with it.
But again, as we mentioned, this last minute or so does fit back into the Die Hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
You know, we can sort of like delete the whole aspect of the plane.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then make things a little bit more diehardish.
Yeah, I think without that, it might have been a little. Yeah, there are some other silly bits using it in an earlier on in the film when he uses the car as kind of like as a
He
bullet
catapults the
sort
car.
of thing. Yeah, although again, it's kind of cool. That's the thing. I'm very torn on this film sometimes. There's bits that I know I shouldn't like, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, that was kind of fun because it was so ridiculous. So yeah, I'm kind of torn on the film, but ultimately enjoyed it. So I'm kind of. I've been warned that it's terrible, the next film, but I don't know. Watching this fourth one, it being better than I expected, is making me more keen to watch the next one, which is probably a mistake. But
Okay,
we'll
no,
see.
it's not a mistake,
Yeah,
because then you can say you've seen it, and that's it, yeah.
sure. And as I say, I like action movies anyway. Even if they're bad, they're usually entertaining.
That's the thing, you have to go in with the right attitude. That's what it comes down to. If you go into five with the attitude that I'm about to go see an amazing Die Hard movie, you'll be clearly disappointed. Okay. Which is what happened to most people, myself included, when we first saw the movie, because you're like, okay, it's another Die Hard movie, and whatever. But you see, you have the benefit of time
Hindsight.
and knowing that it came out 12 years ago, and nobody liked it then and nobody likes it now. But if you go in with the perspective that okay, I'm gonna go watch a fun action movie that I can laugh at, maybe you will enjoy it more. I would love to hear what you think of it after you finally see
I'll get to it soon, hopefully. I'll say
it. Okay.
ready to listen to the rest of the
Exactly. All right, so
podcast.
today we will play a game. The game is 6 Degrees of Bruce Willis. Okay, are you familiar with 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so it's the exact same thing.
Okay,
I'm
cool.
going to give you a name of an actor, and you have to see what is the quickest way that you can think of to connect that actor to Bruce Willis.
Oh, okay, it's gonna be interesting.
Okay.
He's been in
Okay,
so many
so
films.
your first one is Eric Idle.
Eric Idle, oh my God. Yeah, so Bruce Willis is in The Fifth Element with Gary Oldman,
Okay.
who is in Leon with Natalie Portman, who's in Mars Attacks. This is probably a quicker way, but he's in Mars Attacks with Pierce Brosnan, who is in a James Bond film with John Cleese. I can't remember which one. Is it The World Is Not Enough?
Okay, well, we know he's in
He's in a James Bond film. Yeah, I
he's
think it's
in
The
James
World Is
Bond.
Not
No,
Enough.
yeah, exactly.
And then obviously John Cleese is in loads of Monty Python films with Eric Idle. Does
Okay.
that work? Yeah.
It works. It works. There are easier ways
Yeah,
to get
probably.
there. Because but I like the fact that you got the Gary Oldman one. Gary Oldman was actually in the movie Quest for Camelot with Eric Idle.
Oh, wow. Okay. It could have been quicker
So
then.
that would shorten that. Also, Eric Idle was in the movie The Adventures of Baron Munchausen,
Yes.
who both Uma Thurman is in that movie, so she's connected to Bruce Willis through Pulp Fiction,
Yeah.
and Jonathan Pryce is in that movie, who's connected to Bruce Willis by G.I. Joe Retaliation.
There's loads of quicker ways that,
Okay, all right, that's fine. Okay, your next one is Julie Andrews.
oh, more. Okay. Bruce Willis was in Pulp Fiction with Samuel L. Jackson. He's in
Okay.
A Time to Kill with Matthew McConaughey. Oh, I've lost where I got to think. No, I had a roundabout one, but I feel like Matthew McConaughey was in something with Ju with Was he? Oh man. Oh no, I'll do it the other way around. Anyway, he starred with Anne Hathaway in Interstellar, who and Anne Hathaway was in The Princess Diaries with my brain, Julie
Julianne.
Andrews. Yeah. Again, a long way of doing it. I'm sure there's a quicker way.
Yeah, there Okay, so two of the ways that I found was either you have Julie Andrews was in Shrek 2 with Antonio Banderas, who was in Four Rooms with Bruce Willis.
I'm not seeing for it.
Okay, and also John Cleese was in Shrek 2 with
Yeah.
Julie Andrews, and John Cleese and Bruce Willis were in Charlie's Angels Full Throttle together.
Really? Oh, I could have gone way quicker on my previous one then. Okay,
Yes.
yeah.
Okay, the next one is
Oh,
Jamie Lee Curtis.
more. Okay, Jamie Lee Curtis. Oh no, this one's easy. Jamie Lee Curtis. So, yeah, Bruce Willis is in Expendables. Is he in the first one? He's in one of the Expendables films. You know, I think he's in the first one. In Expendables, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is in True Lies with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, that was an easy
Also,
one.
awesome. All right. Another way to go there is Jamie Lee Curtis was in Knives Out with Christopher Plummer, who was in 12 Monkeys with Bruce Willis.
Ah, nice.
Okay. All right. The next one is Hugh Grant.
So Bruce Willis is in Ocean's 12, uncredited, and
Okay.
which is Julie Roberts in that, surely?
Yes.
Because I've not seen Ocean's 12, but I know she's in the Ocean's 11, so I assume so. And then he has been, and then Julie Roberts has been in, oh my God, what's the name of that film? Notting Hill with Hugh
Notting
Grant.
Hill.
Yeah.
Okay. So I found a few here. So Hugh Grant was in Paddington with Emily Mortimer, who was in The Kid with Bruce Willis.
Oh, no.
You also have Hugh Grant was in Extreme Measures with J.K. Simmons, who was in The Jackal with Bruce Willis.
Okay, yeah, oh God, no, I wouldn't have known
Okay, and the final one for you. I know you'll be relieved to
that.
finally be done with this. Olivia Colman.
Yeah, Olivia Colman is in Paddington 3, sorry, Paddington in Peru with Emily Mortimer, who is in something that you mentioned with Bruce Willis, and I've forgotten already. But I had no idea what it, I didn't realise at all.
The kid.
What
It
was
was
it?
she was in The Kid
The Kid,
with
that was
Bruce
it.
Willis.
Okay, yeah. It
Okay.
got there eventually. Terrible.
Okay, so Olivia Colman was also in The Iron Lady with Meryl Streep, who was in Death Becomes Her with Bruce Willis.
Ah, yes, yeah.
That's another route to get there.
I don't know Emily Mortimer well enough. I just
She
get
was
by with
also
what you
in
said.
Olivia Colman was in Hot Fuzz with Cate Blanchett, who was in Bandits with Bruce Willis.
Nice.
She was in Simon Pegg. She was in Hot Fuzz with Simon Pegg, who was in Grindhouse with Bruce Willis.
Simon Pegg's in Grindhouse. Can't remember that.
And we will now do the final state your model for you.
Okay.
The state that we're giving you is Florida.
Okay.
Okay, so the three choices are In God We Trust, Let It Be Perpetual, or To the Stars Through Difficulties.
Oh, I'll go with To the Stars because there's the Cape Canaveral in Florida, isn't there?
Nope, sorry,
Ah.
it's not it. No, the answer is In God We Trust.
Okay. Isn't that on the banknote or something like that as well?
Yes, it
Yeah.
is too. All right, thank you very much for that. So for one final time this season, David, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me over at blueprintreview.co.uk and yeah, check out our reviews of largely physical media.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on my website, movieonminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, and if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, David, thank you very much for joining me once again this season, and an even huger thank you for helping out with the intro and outros
Oh
once again this
yeah,
season.
I had fun with
So
this one. I had
much
fun with this one.
appreciated.
Yeah, was nice to get a bit of credence in there.
That's true. Very good. All right, so I will be back tomorrow with the penultimate episode of this movie, the halfway mark of this season. But until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.